I am joined on the line now by Dr. Catherine Motherway, intensive care physician and president of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland. Good morning to you, Dr. Motherway.
Good morning, Sean.
Now, first of all, and we know all sorts of caveats have been entered because it's too early to say, but are you encouraged by the level of increase in the cases of coronavirus in this country, as outlined last night by Professor Nolan at the regular briefing for the media?
So we're encouraged to hear that there is a fall off in the number of cases, and also what was encouraging was the fall off in number of contacts. So one would devoutly hope that the measures that we are putting in place and that hopefully everybody is following will help halt and or slow the spread and diminish somewhat the surge, please God.
Yes, so, and can I ask what's your sense now this morning, Dr. Motherway, of how our intensive care units are currently dealing with and what kind of pressure are they under from your knowledge?
We're under significant pressure in Dublin, to be fair. I have the numbers here. We have this morning 107 confirmed ventilated cases with a further 26 suspected. So the number of cases are rising, and there is no doubt that the hospitals in the east are being hit first, as we expected, and are under significant pressure and are surging and are managing to deal with the caseload by both surging beyond their routine capacity and also by transferring patients to other hospitals within their group where they have capacity. So at the moment, they're coping with the numbers, but there's no doubt we're under significant pressure, and we are quite concerned that we will be able to control the surge. Now, we can't control it. The people that are listening to you and me can control it by staying at home, doing what they're asked to do, washing their hands, good hand hygiene, good cough etiquette, and physical distancing if they do have to leave the house to go to work is really important. And we can't keep saying it enough. I'm sorry to be so repeating myself so often, but it is the only thing that will manage to control the surge, and we'll try and respond to the number of sick patients that come into us as best we can. But it is the actions of the population as a whole that will diminish the spread and hopefully control somewhat that peak that we are expecting. I think they said in about 2 weeks' time.
And just to clarify, those 107 ventilated cases that you were telling me about at the very outset, those are people who are today in ICU with COVID-19.
Yes.
With another 26 in ICU suspected of having COVID-19. So how does that compare with the picture yesterday?
Yesterday, as I understand it, there was 110 confirmed. So overnight we would have cases admitted, potentially, or there were maybe some cases where we've delayed in swab results. And it seems to be a disease that's quite classical. We are beginning to recognise it quite easily in that it's quite a specific disease process. So we would have a number of suspected cases where we are either awaiting swab results, or sometimes the initial swab might be negative, but we're still fairly convinced that patients may have it, and we repeat that. So there is a false negative rate in some of the swabs, so we have a high index of suspicion depending on how the patient presents.
Right. And what about the mortality rate of these cases once people are in ICUs?
Is that possible? Has not been properly and fully published, but we do know that other viral pneumonias carry a reasonably significant mortality rate, and it will depend on your age and other comorbidities. But they're really quite a sick group of patients. So I said last night on another show, when you're invasively ventilated, we would expect that potentially we could have a mortality rate of up to 40%, and in some people maybe 50%. So that depends obviously on whether or not you have other things wrong with you, what age you are, what diseases you have, and that will vary. But across the board, you know, one would be ideally, the best thing to do is not to go out the door, if at all necessary, and to try and avoid getting infected with the disease, because none of us are immune. The entire population is naive to this disease. None of us are immune. It's not like the last pandemic we had, where older people had immunity. None of us have immunity to this disease thus far. And we know from China, we know from Italy, we know that the patients who are older and who have other diseases like high blood pressure, diabetes, chest problems, are a bit more susceptible to this. And we also know that 80% of people to 85% of people don't have a severe illness. 14% need to go to hospital, and about 5% need to come to critical care. And of that 5%, there is a significant mortality. And it's only as the pandemic sweeps over us, we'll know what the mortality is. And of course, if you work in a healthcare system that gets overwhelmed, the mortality will be higher, unfortunately.
And are you seeing younger people who need to be treated in intensive care?
We are. If I remember rightly, on one of your other stations, they presented some of the age profile figures, and there are people in their 40s and in their 30s occasionally getting sick with disease, and that does happen with viral illnesses. We do see viral pneumonias in young patients. Generally, they do well, but one would prefer not to see them in an intensive care unit if at all possible. So generally, the younger age groups do well, but they can get very sick and can require critical care. And I gather there were some significant issues in the UK. I think they had a 20-year-old who did very unwell. Now, some of these patients may have other illnesses, but some of them don't. They're just unlucky. So ideally,
yeah. Now, this is a text. You're allowed to blush. Could you please tell Dr. Motherway that she is my talisman in all of this? She is so clear and tells it like it is. I wish people would all listen to her. Please. That's in capital letters, says Brian in Dublin. But that said, there is a degree of frustration, perhaps even annoyance from some people over 70. It was obvious and evident since the weekend to the new restrictions that came in last Friday, the cocooning policies, that is, you know, people just not to go outside the door if they're aged over 70, and then they can't walk the dog, they can't go for a walk, even though they believe they can do it safely. As an intensive care doctor, how do you try to persuade, or how should people like that look at this?
If you're older, you're more at risk. We know as each decade goes up, the mortality risk rises. So if you are over 70, the mortality risk rises. You're more likely to get sick, and you're more likely to need to come to hospital. And if you're more likely to need to come to hospital, you're more likely to meet healthcare workers who may in fact get the disease from you. So I'd prefer if you didn't get sick, actually. But you also, it isn't that the government wants to, you know, tell old age people to. We're just giving them health advice. It's the same as you shouldn't smoke, you shouldn't go out with this disease. But this is a more immediate. This is an immediate danger to you, because if you get it, you are far more likely than someone who is younger to have significant disease and to need to go to hospital. And if you need to go to hospital, that is not a good thing when you're in that age group. About one third of the people who need to go to hospital may require admission to the intensive care unit. And we know that in particular with this disease, that age does increase your chances of not surviving. That isn't always the case with all diseases, but age as an independent factor does. And generally, as we get older, we get diseases. So we get things like high blood pressure in the Western world. We get things like diabetes. All of those things tend to come with age. Old age doesn't come alone, my mother tells me. So, I mean, you know, it comes with other things. And it means you are more likely to end up having to go to hospital. And it would be really nice if we didn't have a lot of people coming into the hospital, because then we would be able to deal. Every time you prevent a transmission, you make a bed for somebody else, maybe with a stroke, maybe with a heart attack, maybe with the normal things that people get, because people aren't going to stop getting sick from other diseases just because there's COVID-19 around.
Yeah.
So we need to keep as many beds as possible for our normal emergencies that we need to deal with, along with those people who have already contracted COVID-19. So we need people to understand that this is a virus that's actually quite good at spreading, as we've seen. It's gone up by hundreds of, I mean, the first 100,000, it took about 60 days to arrive, but now we're seeing numbers jump in huge numbers daily.
It's very
distressing.
I remember about 10 days ago making a headline out of the fact that 10,000 people had died worldwide. Now it's over that figure already in Italy, and has been for several days now, which makes the point. How concerned, finally, are you about the testing problems that we've seen arise in recent days? Centres temporarily closed, a shortage of test kits and reagents, and a delay, obviously, on people getting results. I have a text here from somebody who did the COVID-19 test on Saturday, the 21st of March, and as of today, Tuesday the 31st, hasn't received a result.
It's a concern for everybody, the testing issue. And to be fair to the government, and to be fair to, I think, every country in the world, there's a significant and huge shortage with it. But that doesn't stop people from staying at home if they've had a test for the required period of time. Whether or not you're positive, until you know the result, stay at home, isolate. If you have it, you will prevent it being transmitted. And if you don't, then maybe you're a bit bored for a week and it is a severe imposition. But we have a major problem. They're trying to organise that we have the tests, ideally now to ensure that healthcare workers can get back to work for those that actually present with symptoms, because we're not allowed work with it and you need us working. And also for patients in hospital, because we need to know whether you have it or not so we can stream you along a COVID or a non-COVID route so we don't have transmission within the hospital. And if you are isolated at home, we're obviously going to do our best, number one, to get a test result so they can contact Trace. But while you're waiting, stay at home and do understand that, in fairness, everybody is doing their level best to try and fix this. I know that they've been speaking to pharma. I know that all of the laboratories are after upping their ability to test. And there's a significant problem worldwide with lots of things to do with this pandemic, because of course the whole world has experienced the same problem. So it's an imposition, and I think we would love to get the results to people very quickly. And remember now, I'm not a scientist, but they're doing their level best and working to the best of their ability and prioritising those areas that are vitally important. But if you're at home and you're self-isolating, continue to do so until you get your test result, and continue to communicate with your healthcare physician, be that occupational health or your GP.
Dr. Catherine Motherway, President of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland, thank you very much. Now, earlier, you'll recall I spoke to Susan Mitchell of the Business Post and Josh Keaveney, Chair of the Private Hospitals Association, about the deal whereby private hospitals are being taken over by the HSE and everybody will be a public patient from now on. I'm joined on the line by Laura Durkin, Vice President of the Irish Hospital Consultants Association. Thank you indeed for coming on the line. What's your response or overview of what's been agreed now between the government and the private hospitals?
Good morning, Sean. Sure, you'd have to be mad not to welcome the increasing capacity that this means for the patients in Ireland. You know, as Dr. Motherwell said there, we have over 100 in ICU. We're seeing the surge starting of patients coming to the public system, and we are going to need to decant medical patients and surgical patients where necessary out to the private hospitals. So we're hoping that this will be a pressure valve that can be utilised in a successful manner so that we can get the right patient to the right place at the right time so that they get the best possible care.
Has the Irish Hospital Consultants Association, has it been consulted by the HSE and government about this change?
So this change was predominantly kind of discussed between the private hospitals and between the HSE. So we weren't involved specifically in teasing out the kind of agreement, and which I think they've only recently come to, as Dr. Keaveney was saying. So this was a deal that was predominantly struck between the private hospitals and the HSE.
But it is going to have very serious implications for your members, isn't it?
So, these are big. There are big changes at hand. All has changed and changed utterly for everybody. What we can hope is that all of this is a short-term urgent intervention that will, please God, have the best possible outcome for everybody. And I suppose, Sean, like when we look at the way things, practices have changed in the last 2 weeks, it's unthinkable that they would have changed so quickly under any other circumstances. We've gone to a 7-day working week where, you know, there's all shoulders to the wheel. The call routers have been changed massively. People are stepping up everywhere where they need to step up to make sure that as many patients are cared for as safely as possible. And I suppose we can only hope that we do the best possible job and that the public stay at home and that this ends quickly.
Now, the Taoiseach was careful to point out yesterday that this does not amount to nationalisation of private medicine in this country. But it's possible that it will be seen to have worked very well in dealing with the crisis. And people may well be asking, well, look, why can't we keep these changes once we get through this particular crisis?
Yeah, so I suppose, Sean, there's this acute crisis, which I think we are dealing with really well. And I hope that the public do their bit by staying at home. But there will be inevitably a second crisis at the end of this, which is where we figure out what on earth we're going to do with the waiting list at the end of this and what we're going to do with outpatients and how we're going to manage the backlog that's left over from this. And it may be at that point that we need to reevaluate how we look at healthcare. But I think we need to be very careful that at the moment what we're dealing with is crisis management. This isn't in lots of ways business as usual. This is dealing with one big monster that's come to attack us all. The other stuff, the business as usual, we'll have to go back to once this is all over, because those patients need to be looked after.
Yes, and I would have thought that you and colleagues, well, I don't know if it necessarily applies to you, but a lot of your colleagues in the Irish Hospital Consultants Association would have maybe exclusively private patient arrangements or a combination of public and private. This is something that presumably they're maybe willing and more than happy to put up with for a short period in the national interest, but they'll have a different view maybe in 3 or 4 months' time.
So, I mean, the national interest has to be everyone's interest, doesn't it? And it is true that the longer term implications of any of these changes haven't been thought about or teased out. We are assuming that this is a short term urgent intervention that will pass, and we can go back to making sure that any change that is made in the health service is made with the safety of all in mind, you know. I suppose, you know, if you think now, the chronic care stuff, lots of it we're doing peripherally, we're doing by Skype or a version of Skype, we're doing lots of virtual clinics. We can't continue to do that forever because we will ultimately have to be seeing patients again.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of what Paul Reid was quoted at the weekend, in the newspapers at the weekend, as saying that this is launch of care on speed, and it's something that maybe the public will be very pleased with at the end of the day.
It's launch of care on speed.
Which was to take 10 years.
Yeah. I suppose, Sean, it's one of those things. We will do our very best in this urgent situation, but we do always do our very best. And, you know, I suppose any changes that are made in the health service have to be made for the good of everybody. And we do have to make sure that our health service going forward considers everyone's good. And I suppose people saying things like Sláintecare on steroids or whatever that quote was, I can understand that in the heightened emotion that is the present time that seems like the right thing to say. But we need to make sure that any changes that are made with a long-term vision. At the moment, what we're doing is a three-month plan to get us through this acute crisis. And then we need to reevaluate.
Yeah. And finally, what about the issue of contracts? I know there's been criticism in some quarters, Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil, saying that private consultants moving into this new arrangement, albeit for just 3 months initially, will be paid more than the existing new entrant HSE consultants.
So that is, it is actually true. I suppose the only reason that this is highlighted at all is because there is a two-tier pay system for the consultants, whereby there's a big differential between those appointed before and after 2012. I don't think now is necessarily the time to beat out the details of this, but they are getting different terms to what we have in the public system. I suppose we're reliant on the government to deal with everybody fairly. And we really want our private colleagues to come into the fold, and we want them to be part of this narrative and to help the patients of Ireland. And we're hopeful that we can kind of tease all this out and sort this once this acute crisis has passed.
Yeah, and finally, what about your colleagues? Are many of them out on sick leave or on isolation? I think about a quarter or close to a quarter of the confirmed cases are in the healthcare sector.
Oh, Sean, absolutely. It's the in-hospital transmission and the number of staff that are out is a huge concern. We're already coming from a scenario where we're really low on the ground. We've less than half the consultant numbers that we should have. And now with sick leaves and self-isolation and what have you, we are seeing gaps in service starting to arise. The shipment of PPE I'm delighted that that's arrived, and I think that's one of the key pieces that we have to be sure that we get right to keep our healthcare workers on the ground so that we can continue to keep our patients safe. That is a worry.
And just when this new arrangement is up and running, as it is, as in from, I think, yesterday or today, with the HSE taking over the private hospitals, will specialist consultants in given areas, will they have to maybe leave that particular area of speciality and work, you know, as part of a wider plan to deal and give priority to the COVID situation?
So we actually, I suppose I can only, speaking for my own institution, we've had massive step up from consultants out of their areas of specialty to help in loads of different areas. So we've had orthopaedic surgeons volunteering to take shifts in the ED. We've had neurosurgeons taking over shifts in the emergency department. We've had massive step up where people are stepping outside of what will be their usual comfort zone. And the truth is, is that there aren't enough medical doctors to manage this alone, and that we will be asking our colleagues in other specialties to help us with these patients and also with the normal patients who come to the emergency department medically unwell in other ways. And so far there's been a huge step up in the public system, and I would anticipate that similar will likely happen in the private. And that's because everybody wants to help and everybody wants to be all hands on deck, and we are all doctors, you know. So there's a great collegiality around the place, and I think people will step outside of their comfort zone now, albeit that we will do that in as safe a way as we possibly can.
Okay, thanks indeed for joining us. That's Laura Durkin there, Vice President of the Irish Hospital Consultants Association.